In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey everybody, Jim Hoffman here for EMS Office Hours. We're going to have Josh Knapp with us in a second. Josh, are you with us?
I am. How you doing? Sorry to miss, I was caught in traffic in New York City.
Oh, that's okay. That's all right. So, before we get started, of course, I want to thank our sponsor, EMS Manager, for sponsoring this episode of EMS Office Hours. Go check them out for a free customized trial at emsmanager.net. Josh, I think we have a call. I don't want to keep anyone on hold tonight if we can help
it. Bring them in.
So we'll get going there. And I think we're live now. Hello?
It's Bob.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, Bob. Long
good.
Time no chat.
Good. How are you guys?
So
I have a question. What did you do? Send everybody north? Because the roads are insane for a Sunday night. Nuts. People should be inside waiting for the Academy Awards.
I know. It's a big night tonight.
Our bridge, the bridge by me that goes into New Jersey is usually jammed going on Sundays, and it backs up down 95. So they're all headed your way, I guess. From D.C. and Baltimore and wherever else they come from.
I had more drivers from New Jersey cut me off. I pulled up at my block, and there's this lady, you know, with Jersey plates, no less, coming up and taking two spots. And I'm like, I look at her like, are you for real? Are you kidding me?
She's owning it.
It's like, what? I said, man, if you move up, 7 feet, you might leave enough room for two cars. Oh, I'm sorry.
She don't need you backing up and dumping it to us. She ain't got time for that.
No, not in her white new Lexus, after all.
Right, exactly. You need
your black Ford.
Yeah, you need you and your friggin', Ford, whatever the hell you got there. Ford, what is it, Crown?
It's Ford, Crown Vic, right. Vic, it's a 19, for everybody,
Duesenberg.
It's a 1969 Crown Vic.
Yeah, yep, with like that one... Like old-fashioned
and it has
red light.
And one old-fashioned red light, and one fender is in putty, fender is prime, and the rest is shit yellow.
But it drives, and you don't have to worry about people hitting you when you take up two spots, getting pissed off. And
right, that's why I was all upset, by the way, Jim, because it was my two spots to take.
Right, yeah. Yeah, your unassigned, assigned spots that are on the block that you live that... You know, it's unspoken.
It is. It's not unspoken. It's very well spoken.
Yeah, it's unspoken. Yeah, spoken by you and your immediate friends, but that's pretty much about it.
Right. And they'll come by with their jacks and cinder blocks too later anyway.
Yeah.
Nice wheels. So what's on the schedule? Taking a look. It seems like every time I bitch about what's happening in Medic Refresher, you put it up on the on Blog Talk.
I know. Well.
What the hell, man?
I got tired of bitching about it, so I figured, you're complaining, so I figured we'll address it a little bit. The one thing I do want to say to listeners out there, if you go to the EMS Office Hours website, on the top tab where it says Office Hours, there's actually a way for you now to leave a voicemail for us and let us know what you think about the show, or give us a suggestion for something you want to see or hear on the show. So you don't have to go ahead and leave a comment with your name or anything. If you don't want to be, recognized, you want us to just sort of leave like an anonymous suggestion or something like that. I know people out there are not all that comfortable, putting their name on the blog and whatever, but you can just leave a voicemail.
We'll call you out. We'll find you.
No, it doesn't give me that number. It's through the computer, so they can just leave it right off their computer. They can just, you know, click the button and leave a voicemail and let us know what stuff they want to listen to. So we're popcorn done? Oh, somebody's battery dying or the popcorn's done.
Well, you know what? If you're going to tune into a show like this, it's always a good idea to have popcorn.
Exactly. So, well, the
Hey, John, I see you. I'll push the Lexus out of the way. Yeah, absolutely, man. That's I got a story offline to tell you about a snowstorm and a BMW that met with my front grill push bar. But that's another time.
I think you bored the shit out of Bob with your Lexus parking spot.
No, he probably had something now more important to do. He's going to call us back.
So, yeah, he has something more important to do. It's called, you know, go figure, put toothpicks in his eyes.
Probably had to go and save a life, yeah. Actually, instead of, you know.
Save his own life, but I listened to your damn freaking parking story. Jesus Christ. All right, well, listen, what I wanted to talk about today, I see Joe is in the chat. Joe, welcome. Probably interesting to hear what you have to say about tonight's show. Talking a little bit about chest tubes in EMS, and I've seen with the new curriculum coming out, and that's been out in some areas already nationwide, is the maintenance of chest tubes in the field. You know, either this is pretty much more for interfacility transport type stuff where we're maintaining the chest tubes. I know years ago when I was doing interfacility transport, actually at New York Hospital, Cornell, you know, we got to a patient and they had a chest tube in. And I was like, what in God's name is that? I had no idea what I was doing, what I was supposed to expect. And, you know, they have the contraption and it's, you know.
For, Christ, in your days, what, it had bellows?
Well, it was quite the plastic sort of looking like a little fish tank on the side of the bed. You know,
right. And, so you had water suction.
Yeah.
You weren't. You're not that old.
No, I'm not that old. But I was like, well, I don't know. I didn't. Right. I was never in service on it. I didn't know what the hell it was or what to do or what.
If
to
it
expect.
Was good to drink from,
right.
You know, the do important
put,
things.
Right. Do I put, you know, Alka-Seltzer in there to see what happens? I don't know what to do. So, of course, I asked the doctor. And I'm like, you know, what's going on with this patient? Whatever.
You know,
so, he goes, "Oh, just keep it." He goes, "Just keep it below the patient." That's what he told me. That was my in-servicing.
Right.
You know, that was my in-servicing.
Mine actually had, and don't pull on it.
Yeah, and don't pull on it. Don't kink the tubes. You know. So, I mean, I think it's good that they're working this into curriculum for showing us how to. Maintain, you know, chest tubes for patients that have them, especially since, you know, there's a lot of interfacility stuff that goes on out there. But I also was looking online and hearing that there are places out there that EMS does do chest tubes. And Josh, did you say that they were doing it in your refresher, or was it just...
We're going to learn how to do it in the refresher. And in my critical care course, we actually did it on cadavers. Cadavers. Did I say cadavers?
Diver,
man.
Cadaver,
cadavers. You diver. Say tomato, I say tomato. Yeah. On the cadavers. So we had a cadaver lab, and we did cricoid thorotomies and chest tubes. But my understanding is that it's the skill will be to place the chest tube, how to place the chest tube, but it will be it's the requirement is that you know how a chest tube is handled. So it's for handling it. So but you have to know a little bit more for your like your in service on it.
Hmm.
Which is, you know, I'm not sure how that makes much sense. But I'll tell you something. You know, one of the nice things, and I really, you and I talk about education a lot on this show, and we talk about, you know, taking the opportunity to go. And it's more than just sitting in a CME given by your organization or, you know, a class that's a few blocks away. If you ever have the opportunity, go out of state. get some training. You know, this, and if you think, well, I don't have the money for it, the CDP, Center for Domestic Preparedness, has tons of free training all around the country. And one of the cool things is, even though you learn some cool stuff through those programs, right, is you meet providers from other areas of the country and you find out how they're doing it. So, like, I was talking to a guy in Alaska, and they actually are responsible for inserting chest tubes. And somebody piped up, I don't know, from somewhere in the Midwest and said in their jurisdiction they actually can place a chest tube. So I don't know, you know, that seems to me, it seemed to me at the time very far-fetched. And so is it like a chest Foley? No, Joe.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. I put a post on my Facebook fan page and just pretty much asked people, yes or no, do they think we should be doing that in the field? And, I mean, you're talking about pretty much people split down the middle. I mean, people saying yes, people saying no, some people saying yes, but we have to have more training. Some people saying no, you know, we can't even get the intubations right. How much more, and other people, and then you get the people talk about the pay issue of it, you know, how much more they're going to have us do and not pay us any more money and give us all this additional sort of responsibility, you know. And then I was looking online as well and just trying to find like concrete protocols that say that EMS is doing it. Now, I couldn't find any doing a little Google search there on it, other than seeing some flight medics being able to do it, you know, flight nurses being able to do it. Some of the areas where I think it was Alaska, but places like Alaska, where you're talking long transport times to a hospital, you know, where they feel that that's something that, that their methods can do. And even then, the guideline had said that in order for, you know, the paramedics to do that, they have to have, additional training and comfort level and stuff like that. And I tell you, I mean, listen, I was looking at some of the blog postings out there, too, even on things like GEMS Connect and whatever. There was actually a thread on there, I think it was like 2 years ago, and they brought it up about doing chest tubes. And I think a lot of people made some good points there when they talk about the frequency that we would be doing that in the field to even suggest that we would be proficient in it. You know, I think about how many times we had patients that you would have to do that.
But you want to know something, in some ways, you know, it's very funny. We come across something new and there's an immediate reaction to it. And some of it is, some of that reaction embraces, some of it says, what are you crazy? But I think that there's a general reaction of fear. And that people like, I have enough to know right now. Why do I need to know that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's part of it. But I think it's also I think part of it, like you said too, Josh, with the nice to know, like you go outside, out of whatever estate that you're in, and you encounter other EMS providers from other states and get their take on things. And that's something that's nice, like when you go to conventions and stuff and you meet people from other states and you kind of get a sort of like a crash course on what their area's doing.
Well, I think that's important for another reason. And the other reason is simply that, you know, the more you learn about what's being done in other areas, the more connections you make to people in other states, the more it unites us as a field of medicine, and the more that we can add to our toolbox of arguments on why we should be changing our protocols, why we should be adapting new protocols, how people other places do as well. And, you know, we really do need to move to like one protocol for all the country, one set of standards for how we do it. Because as Tim has said many a time, and I agree with him, there ain't no difference between somebody having a heart attack in, you know, Rhode Island as there is to California.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely something that that's a whole nother show when you think about it, talking about, the standardizing, you know, protocol. But I think I don't know. Like I said, to me, when you talk about doing them, should we be doing them? I say no. I don't think we should be doing them. I don't think there's a need for it. You know, where you have a frequency that much where you're doing it. I mean, I haven't done that many chesting compressions in 20 years, you know, doing it. I've done one needle crike, you know, in 20 years. You know what I mean? So you're talking about skills that you don't do that often to begin with, and now you're going to add something else that you do very infrequently, you know, on top of the additional education you have to get for that, you know, for that as well. You know, I just don't see it really benefiting us other than saying, well, you know, it's something else. It's something to add to our toolbox, something else that we can say that we do. But then I reading a lot of the posts, man, I tell you, I was really sort of blown away by a lot of people saying, well, you know, I went to a hospital doing the facility transport and the patient needed it and the doctor didn't want to do it because the doctor wasn't comfortable in doing it. He was in a way for it to get to the the transfer facility, you know. So,
but you know what? I'll tell you, when you did a needle decompression, did you do it on a conscious patient?
I did do it on a conscious patient once, yes.
Okay. I mean, but you've seen it done on a conscious patient.
Yeah.
And what is the immediate, like, what, I mean, to me, the one time that I've done a needle decompression, I'll be honest, it was as satisfying as any hypoglycemic, giving them a MAMP, a D50, and having them wake up and go, who are you? You know, mm-hmm. It was immediate relief, and you saw it on the guy's face. He just was like, you know, he reached up and he grabs your hand and he mouths the word thank you. I mean, holy crap, you know?
My understanding on the chest tube is that
they're not as happy about it.
Well, from what I understand, it doesn't hurt all that much, you know, because I don't know the procedure step by step, but
maybe Joe could pipe in about that.
You know, I think you make the incision and then you pretty much make the hole with your finger. You're not really making a hole with anything surgical. I'm out looking online about people talking about, talking about skills and stuff that we don't do that often. And you talk about just needle decompression where you do it on the lateral side of the patient and people, you know, puncturing livers with, you know, catheters, you know, and they talk about the same thing with the chest tube. And what would happen if you hit the liver when you're trying to get in there?
Right. Right. I mean, they definitely talk about that as a danger, but the way I learned was, you know, you take the, hemostats and you clamp them onto the end of the tube that you're about to thread in, and you make a vertical incision. I believe it's between the fourth and fifth rib on the medial aspect of the chest wall, and then you take the end of your finger with the hemostat, and you sort of puncture through the membrane, pericardium. Am I saying it right? Is that the right thing?
Not the pericardium. I don't think it's the pericardium.
Not the what?
I don't think it's the pericardium.
It's that thick membrane that lines the chest wall, and you push through that, and then you feed that vertically. Pleural wall, thank you, the pleural wall. You feed the chest tube vertically up and to the point where all the holes are covered, and then it's supposed to be sutured in place, but in a pinch it can be taped in place.
Yeah.
And then it's you're supposed to confirm that it's in placement correctly with a X-ray, but it's one of those things that you can tell that it's pretty much in place because the person's respirations improve.
Mm-hmm.
Drainage happens, you know.
Right, so, right.
those things. And this is not, and I'm by no means a professional at this. You know, I've been trained. I've never done it in the field. Never. I'm not allowed to do it in the field, but I've gone through some training.
Have you ever heard of doctors, med control, telling a medic to do it?
No.
On a patient? I've heard stories of that, of trauma patients.
I mean, who would have a chest tube on the bus?
I don't think they use the chest tube, but they use something else. But I know that there was a guy that I knew when I was in Brooklyn, and he had a traumatic job. And the closer hospital, you could throw a rock and hit it, but they couldn't handle trauma. And the guy, in his opinion, was not going to make it to the trauma center without it. He called the doc, and the doc let him do it. And everybody was up in arms over it. You know, oh, my God, you know, string him up, tar and feather him and all this stuff. And then turns out he didn't get in trouble. In the end, he didn't get in trouble at all.
Well, he must have documented really well, documented the hell out of it, and also had the doctor, you know, on a tape line basically telling him to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess if you're right, and Joe actually goes an ET tube, and it's like, oh, you get the scalpel from the OB kit.
Yeah.
Joe. All the OB kit.
Everybody knows what scalpel is. The first thing you see, wow.
What the hell is the scalpel doing here?
What's this sharp instrument back here?
Sharp, sharp, sharp. Oh, my God.
I don't know. I think maybe you might be right, Joe. Some of them might have scissors. I don't know.
Well, then you can rub them really hard, fast, back and forth.
Yeah.
That would probably be bad. Don't follow that. If you're listening, this is not the direction.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, one of the things I saw, one of the threads, I think Skip Kirkwood had commented on it, and he had said, you know, something like this is something where you have to look at, and this is what Joe had mentioned a little earlier, you know, something as the administrator for an organization or a doctor, and look at it, you know, how often do you need it? How often do you think you're going to need this pre-hospitally? What are the indications? What are contraindications? How much training is going to be required? How much continuing education is going to be required? How much hands-on stuff is going to, you know, all this stuff you have to sort of look at before you even get to the point of giving a green light, you know, for that type of thing, you know. And you think about all that training and thought and research I have to get done and put into it to implement something like this. Where can we put that, you know, in an agency or in our protocols that would better be served, you know, rather than trying to take on something like this that I don't think is probably used as much or would be used, you know, as much. And, you know, wouldn't we be better off taking that money, time, effort, training, organization, all that good stuff, and putting it into something more valuable for stuff that we do out there, you know?
You know, and there is a $1 million question, isn't it, Jim? I mean, you know, where are our priorities? What's the more valuable thing? What do we do? What do we do with the money that we have, and where is it best placed?
Yeah, I feel like
we should hire more firefighters.
Well, you know what? I mean, I'd rather have focus on putting CO detectors on the, you know, on the ambulance. You know, spend
the
money for that.
You type radical
of thing.
Person, you.
I am.
You're a radical, radical man.
Yeah, there's no stopping me.
Yes.
But
wait a second. What good is the CO detector going to do?
Well, because you can, you know, determine the carbon monoxide on patients you get with, you know, from.
Or maybe when you go into that basement unconscious call, you know, and it starts beeping, you get, you know, to get the hell out.
Yeah, I mean, not just for that, but also like on the patient, like we have the pulse oxes for the patient, also, you know, to read it on the patient as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Even things like. When I did the EMS Web Summit, and Kelly was with us, and he did a whole thing on sepsis, and he talks, and there's a gadget out there to read how septic a patient is, so that you know how aggressively to be treating them out in the field, you know. So it's things like that, to me, that I think we'd be better off spending our training and time and money on to get these sort of diagnostic tools and training on how to use them and further training on that type of thing that you see much more often. You know, you see septic patients much more often than you do somebody who's going to need a chest tube.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You know, I mean,
and there are services that use, you know, I think you're referring to something like the ISTAT, where you can take a drop of blood and immediately tell, you know, if
no,
they're...
What he showed, I can't hear the top of my head. It's driving me crazy.
It's getting less expensive than the ISTAT.
It's like $500. I looked it up. It's like $500, I think.
Oh, great.
For it. Oh, my God. I can't remember what the hell it is. But I remember he had talked about it, and he mentioned that, you know, it's a great device. It's easy to use, easy to implement, but there's a cost factor involved. And that's what keeps us, you know, back from getting a device like that, which is unfortunate because, to me, again, that type of thing, I think, would benefit us a lot more than sitting here trying to, you know, put holes in people. You know, and again, I guess there are exceptions because you do have, again, you've got the areas where you have a long transport time, and maybe the patient wouldn't make it if they didn't get the chest tube. You know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a couple of
figure, but it's almost like you go around in circles, right?
Right.
Because then you got, okay, well, it's the rural areas, how many calls do they get to begin with if they're going to be doing chest tubes? You know, how busy of a system is it? If it's so, you know, backwards, why, you know, why would they need paramedics to be doing chest tubes? How many patients are they getting to begin with? Just a regular patients to.
Well, if you know, and that really opens up the icky can of worms of standards, because what are the standards? You know, in a rural backwater area, a paramedic could be expected to get one or two tubes a month, where in a city you're expected to get, you know, six or eight tubes a month. You know, depending on what area you're working in. Now, who's going to be more proficient? And then you argue, well, why is it acceptable that one person be more proficient at it than another simply because of lack of opportunity? I mean, shouldn't there be an aspect that, you know, the skills we're expected to be doing in the field? Everybody knows that if you don't continue your skills, they will erode over time. I mean, that's just a given. That's one of the tenets of you know, yeah, medicine and EMS. It's not something that stays with you forever. So you got to continue to refresh and practice and do. And once every 3 years, once every 6 months, it's not enough.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have you held down your kid or your dog or your wife and done an IO on them, or you know, stuck them with a large bore catheter, or you know, try to intubate them when they were conscious, right?
Bring my sex life into
this. We've all done that. You know, you sneak up on them when they're sleeping and you try to intubate them real quick, and hopefully they don't wake up.
Yeah, but you want to know something? It's not it's acceptable because, again, the public doesn't know it. It's acceptable to have a million little protocols. I'm not even sure why it's acceptable to have a million little protocols. Because, God honest truth, it's like if I were a doc in some rural town, the first thing I would do is look over at the next larger town and see the way they're doing something. And if the next larger town doesn't have their shit wired tight together, then I would look over to the next largest city. And continue to look until I could find a set of protocols and rules that made sense that I could adopt. And then, you know, use that. I don't know why we haven't just used, you know, the best set from around the country and adopted that nationwide. I don't get it.
Yeah, it is very frustrating. I mean, I think some areas probably need protocols that are unique to that area. You talk, I bring up Alaska, but because it's easy, but you might have more cold weather sort of, you know, specific kind of protocols in an area like that, you know what I mean, than you would, let's say, in California, you know. But I think the bulk of the protocols, I don't see a reason why we shouldn't, you know, be having a standardized set of guidelines nationwide, you know, for it. And again, this goes back to even this general topic tonight, you know. You talk about yes or no chest tubes and should we be doing it and things like that. And why can't we just, and this is what I put in the show notes, so why don't we just stick with what we know? focus on the issues that are at hand, and the things, the challenges that are facing us as a profession, and stop trying to add new little things because it's cool or because, somebody saw it save somebody's life once type thing, without anything. I mean, I read one article and the doctor was like freaking out over it. No, absolutely not. No, under no circumstances should they be doing chest tubes in the field. The danger between the anatomical location versus the cleanliness of the environment, everything involved, and pretty much ended it with, despite his disagreement of wanting to do it, is the fact that there's no research done on whether or not it would be beneficial.
You know what I think I would find funny is if they started doing something like that in the field, and then they basically evaluated all the research, and it turned out more chest tubes were done on the left side. Now, wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't that say something? Wouldn't that be a reflection back to us?
What do you mean?
Which way does the patient lie in a bus?
Oh.
It's convenient. That's why I'm doing a chest tube.
Right.
He's on the other side.
Right. Because then you're right. Because I got to step around them. I got to get on the side.
Haven't you ever seen a medic over there? Like maybe not. They should get an IV. Okay, I'm going to do an IV just so I have one for show. And then they blow it, and then they don't go to the left side to do it because it's too much to lean over the patient.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean the right side. They do it on the left, they blow it, right. But that's, we have to participate in these studies as well. And we cannot be just passive victims of these ideas. And, I was sort of thinking, it's like, look at what's sort of going on around the country. The new standard is 12 leads. And more, I wasn't even aware. Talk about just not paying attention, but that a lot of units, a lot of ALS units around the country didn't have the ability to do a 12-lead EKG. And now there are areas that are up in arms because they have to buy these newfangled machines, yeah. With their LifePak 10s. They work just fine. And now they have to get these, expensive machines to do 12 leads. Why? Because the doctors who were running the cath labs, who are making money for the hospital, say, you know what? We should know this out in the field. It's a standard of care.
Yeah. And this goes back to a lot of things that piss me off. And, one of them is this mentality of, well, these small agencies can't afford it. To me, tough shit. If you can't afford it, find someplace to get the money, or let a contractor come in and do it.
Or tell your public that they're not going
right.
to get that.
Right. Tell your community, if you're in a small community, tell them, listen, we want to put 12 leads. It's the standard of care. It can save a life. It can do this, do that. But it's going to cost us, $15,000 for the equipment and everything. Well, if they want to live when they're having a heart attack, they're gonna pay for it. This constant excuse of the area is too small, they can't afford it, and that's why they don't have equipment and they're not following standards of care that the bigger areas are following because of money. It's not fair to people that live in these communities to not be afforded, what the rest of what the neighboring urban sort of environment might be giving them just because they're in a lower populated area.
Oh, you know what? And this just sort of reminded me. I'm not even sure how. Hand in hand with the chest tubes, there are two other skills that you're going to have to demonstrate proficiency with. One is the Morgan lens, which is, some places already have them, and
yeah.
It's just a good idea. I mean, it saves you from cutting apart a nasal cannula and doing some funky thing with that,
yeah.
right? But
yeah.
Guess what the other thing is? Have you heard?
No.
Full lease.
I hope to tell when I'm doing that, too.
Yes. It's going to be a skill.
Are you sure these are skills and they're not just...
I'm absolutely positive they're skills. They're coming down the line. The new standard for the National Registry is going to be chest tubes, Foleys, and Morgan lenses.
Yeah, but is it going to be actually doing the skill, or is it going to just be...
Well, you'll have a mannequin, for crying out loud.
I know, but familiar... I'm talking about, or is it going to be showing us how to maintain a Foley, or, they're going to, or maintain...
What's the... Wait a second. Stop. Stop for a second. Maintaining the Foley. Let me ask you. From anything different than you've done for years when you were a transport medic and just picked somebody up, tilted the bag, even brought it above the patient sometimes, or had to, because the nurse was too lazy, you emptied it, you know? I mean, what's there to maintain a Foley?
Well, I think what they're doing is in the curriculum is just sort of making it an official, training on it. So that there's no confusion on how they're supposed to be handled, you know.
Not anymore, John. I'm 100%.
You're gonna have to send me the links if you have them or something on that crap, because I couldn't find it at all. As far as actually doing it, you know what I mean. I could not find the actual doing of the chest tube or anything like that. I mean, they're working in even the automatic transport ventilators is another one that they're working
yep.
in
well,
as.
Ventilator. Yep.
What's that?
We're gonna go over the ventilator as well.
Yeah, that's something else. That's another thing where all skill levels are going to be doing it, and you know, at certain levels you can only kind of adjust certain settings, and other levels you can provider levels you can do a little bit more, but that's another thing that they're. That they're, you know, put it that's in the curriculum. But I think a lot of places already use them, and you know, the person already familiar with them, things like that. I think that it's just sort of making it again. It's sort of making the trying to make this national, curriculum on it, instead of having it where you are jumping around region to region, state to state on what they're teaching their EMTs and paramedics and things like that. I wish they would do the same thing for protocols and stuff as well, you know, not just the training, but also the protocols and stuff, you know. I mean, I did a Google Hangout this week on 12-lead, and we talked about a patient that had a STEMI going on, and we talked a little bit about the protocol on the call, you know, the girl was having an obvious STEMI going on, and talked about how the call the doc where your med control was, and the doc said, okay, well, keep giving nitro every 5 minutes, and oxygen, and take it to the STEMI center, the cath lab, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then I forward, you know, I transmit the EKG to the receiving facility where they do the cath, and talk to the doc there, and the doc says, no, just give one more nitroglycerin, and I'll see you when you get here. So now you've got the protocol for both regions are pretty much the same as far as the nitroglycerin every 5 minutes and things like that, based on blood pressure, blah, 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 blah. But the docs gave sort of conflicting orders. And now the one doc is in the region where I work and where I'm credentialed, and the other doc is in the next region over where I'm not credentialed. So who the hell do I listen to? You know, the doc that does CATs every day, you know, that hospital that's a cardiac center,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or the smaller hospital that's going by the protocol that I'm credentialed in by giving nitro every 5 minutes. And we talked about this a little bit about this on the Google Hangout. Actually, Greg Fries and Rami Duckworth and Tom Boothley all joined me on that Hangout, and we talked a little bit about that.
When did you do that?
I did it on Thursday, 3 p.m. It's over on the website, guys, on the EMS Office Hours blog. You can check it out there, and you can take a look at
that. Yeah, you told me about that before.
Yeah, I got a picture.
Should,
I have a picture of the ETC.
Send out a notice, man.
Like that.
Yeah.
But just, again, another interesting thing where being that things aren't standardized, it made for the type of thing that me as a paramedic, you know, I hung up with the receiving doc, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute now. What do I do? Because now I've got about a 45-minute transport time, you know, to this receiving facility. So one nitro, you know, 5-10 minutes later, that's it. Now I'm staring at the person, you know, for the next for the next half hour.
And they're still having chest pain.
And they're still having chest pain, you know, whatever. But, you know, I don't know. Again, I think it, that's the type of thing where we start having confusion, you know, in the field, you know, when it comes to that. So listen, before we go any further, we only got another 20 minutes, and I don't want this time to get away from us, but I want to talk just a little bit about the sponsor again, if everybody listening wants to just bear with us a second. And when I say bear with us, it's also not just so much because we're reading this sponsorship, but also because I think it's good for the listeners to take advantage of this opportunity. Because, listen, it's one thing to have a sponsor that's just trying to sell stuff over and over again. The good thing with EMS Manager, who's sponsoring this episode, is that they're offering a free customized trial of their software. So there's no commitment from the people that go to their website at emsmanager.net and give it a shot. So you go there and you can check it out. You can get a customized trial of this thing. And really, they got free Trek support. There's free training, free upgrades, you know. And the best thing with this is that they price EMS Manager, they price the software based on the size of an organization, okay? So it's not like everybody pays, you know, whatever, $200, $500, whatever it is for it, right? They price it for the organization, so it's always affordable for each organization, whether you have 5 employees or 500. And, you know, it's web-based, so you can get it from any smartphone, any laptop, any desktop. You know, you can get it from any place online. So that's another great thing about it. And it's in the cloud. You know, and that's like a fancy sort of term that it's sort of up there and it's everything's updated and there's no IT costs involved, right? Everything gets done in the cloud. You don't have to worry about somebody coming to your agency and getting on your computer and trying to fix crap, right? It all goes through the cloud. So they do it one place and then everybody gets to benefit from it. So go check it out, guys. It's emsmanager.net. I want to thank them for sponsoring EMS Office Hours as well as a lot of the other EMS programs out there from the ProMed Network. EMS Manager is proud to sponsor EMS providers and managers through this sponsorship, and they support everything that we do here on these podcasts. So show your support for them, guys. Go check it out. Take a few minutes. Get their free trial at emsmanager.net. It's from Aladtech. That's the name of the company that makes EMS Manager, and they have this fantastic online employee scheduling and workforce management software. emsmanager.net. Get a free customized trial, and I think you will like it. I did when I tested it out. And again, when you go get that trial, guys, emsmanager.net, they got videos there on everything that goes on. So you don't got to sit there reading a manual, 500-page manual. Just watch the video, and you find out how to go ahead and use it. So go check that out, guys. If you do go, make sure you tell them that EMS Office Hours, Jim and Josh, sent you over there. So, what's that?
Because we did.
Yeah.
And remember, if it works on your browser, it will work in the cloud.
Exactly. So.
So we're back on bitching about all these new skills that we're going to have to learn.
I hate to say we're bitching about it, man. It's just, you know, to me, it's
bitching by whiny bitches.
It's frustrating to me because I don't know, like I put, like I said, I put this yes, no question on the Facebook page, and I get a lot of people saying no. So, I mean, some people are you know, screaming no way, and some people say yes, it'll save lives, and you know, I don't know where some of these people are saying yes, it'll save lives, where they're getting their, you know, sort of opinion from, unless they've seen it happen. One person said that they're already doing it. I asked them where they were from. They didn't answer in time for me before I got on the show here. So I'd be interested to know. I mean, listen, if anybody out there listening, if you are doing chest tubes at your agency, I'd love it if you put it in the comments and the show notes here at Blog Talk Radio or over on the blog at EMS Office Hours. You know, let us know if you guys are doing it, because I'd love to know, you know, how you're doing it and what the process is, how long you've been doing it. I think it'd be interesting to sort of find out, you know, how that came about at your agency. Because, again, you know, a lot of these doctors and other opinions I saw and a lot of these threads talking about this, their hesitation is that there's nothing out there research-wise that shows, like Joe had mentioned early on, you know, the need for it and all that stuff and the frequency that you're going to be doing it pre-hospitally. You know, I think all that has to be looked into before we start just embracing something like this. And again, like, you know, another thing said too is the fact that when we have so much, so many other things that we could take that money and time and training and effort to put into an EMS without going into something new. You know, sticking with what we know, focusing on the things that we're doing now, and being experts at what we do. You know, Tim comes on the show a lot. He says we don't do all that much, but what we do, we should be, you know, professionals at. We should be perfect at. You know, and that's what I think we should be really focusing our time, money, and efforts on. So, Josh, I don't want to beat this too much.
No, I mean, you've covered it. I think I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah. Joe, if you or John have any more comments in the chat, be sure to post that in there. Listen, guys, if you're listening to us live on Blog Talk Radio, I appreciate it. If you're a first-time listener, be sure to put it in the comments there. I'd love to know what you thought about the show or even make a suggestion about or some topic that you want to talk about in the future. I want to say hello and thank you to my most recent Twitter followers. Nathan Rogowski, Trauma on the Kindle, Dr. Gibson is following me, Daniel Menousis, and Eton Beavers. So those are all my new Twitter followers this week, so go check them out. Go to my Twitter account. If you follow me on Twitter, I'm at EMS Safe, all one word. You can go check it out. You can see my new followers there and tell them I said, hey, tell them you heard about them on the show, and be sure to follow them. There are other EMS, you know, EMS peeps on Twitter, so go check them out. And, of course, go check out EMSSEO.com for free study and training resources, and Josh, of course, at WANDU.com as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's it. I think we covered it all.
We'll tie it up there, guys. That sounds good to me.
All right.
John has actually on his 1 Union 801, the webcast that's found here right on Blog Talk Radio. He has a show Saturday night at 10:30, and it is with Don Lundy. He says he's from the NAEMT, and they're going to be talking about the EMS on the Hill Day coming up this year. 2013. That should be an interesting show. Hopefully, if I'm not sleeping by 10:30, I will try to pop in as well and listen to the show and maybe stir some stuff up there and, you know, make everybody uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, it's a worthwhile cause. Get them to think. Exactly. Get these guys to earn their keep.
Right. Exactly.
You know how I feel.
Oh, my God. 11:30 Eastern time.
Yeah, he's an hour out there. It's really, you know, it puts a kink in a lot of.
I'm going to be kicking the rooster in the ass by the time the show's over.
It's late night Midwestern folks.
I know.
Don't you know when? I thought you're supposed to go to sleep early and get up when the corn rises.
Right.
Or something
that's
like
what I
that.
Too.
Come on. What the hell?
Oh.
11:30. Jesus. You couldn't find a better time? Really?
Let's see. The other thing I want to mention, too, I don't know if anybody has seen this new show on Nat Geo. John, I'm sure you have seen it. The Combat Rescue. The Combat Rescue show.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that little Josh yet or no?
You know what? I actually was privileged enough to go to a CME, and that's why I tell people to go on combat. And I met the guys who
don't
do
care
it.
About you and your fucking how.
I
you
met
saw.
The guys who
nobody
do
cares
it. Talking about the show coming up.
No one cares. No, I'm asking if you saw the show. I don't care if you meet the guys and you had
you
each other on the back.
I'm going to keep it up for one of those marathons where I get to watch it all at one time.
Well, it just started. It is like maybe only one or two shows that have come out so far. But let me tell you something. Really cool show, guys. These guys are medics on the helicopter and stuff and pulling the soldiers and Marines and whatnot that get hurt out there. And pretty intense show. But it's interesting to see them do things like tourniquets, and they did an IO, actually, this past episode. So pretty cool stuff there, you know, mixed in with the regular drama and the personal aspect of it. So I'm not getting any money for it. They're not sponsoring EMS Office Hours, although they are welcome to. But go check it out, guys. I think it's Monday nights on Nat Geo. And John, you don't get Nat Geo, then you should get it. Call your cable company up and demand it.
Yeah, that's like a rip. You don't get Nat Geo?
Must have show. Must have.
Like, really? He doesn't get it? Holy shit.
Real. All right, guys, so that's it. John, Joe, thanks for popping the chat.
Then go on the internet. You can see it there.
Yeah, you probably could. You probably could Hulu with John.
Yeah. See, these guys do amazing things, and you know, just not to belay the point here, belabor the point, but a lot of the stuff like where we got the hemostatic gauze from and the reintroduction of tourniquets and that stuff comes from their regular protocols.
Absolutely.
Comes from there, and they had to fight for it to reintroduce it. So there was a whole thing going on within the military. You know, we think, the military just does it and it's there. But they have their own world that they have to navigate through. And, John, I'm sure you could elaborate on that one day using not four-letter words, too.
Yeah, exactly. All right, listen, let me wrap it up there. John, thanks for popping in. Joe, thanks for coming to chat as well. I appreciate it, guys, keeping it lively there and keeping the conversation going. I really appreciate it. Of course, you're welcome anytime. Feel free to call in. Let me know if you want to call in, and I'll keep an eye for you as well. So, Josh, thank you as well, and I'll see you next week.
All right. Take care. Stay safe.
All right, guys. That's it for tonight's episode. As always, Jim Hoffman for EMS Office Hours. Stay safe.